Welcome to Audio Notes. I'm David Finkel, Artistic Director of Music at Menlo, and it is my pleasure to introduce you to the music you'll be hearing at the festival. For Music at Menlo's 17th season, we'll explore seven incredible decades, singular periods in Western music history that saw intense concentration of the art form's evolution at the hands of its greatest innovators. We'll hear music of the 1710s, when Bach created some of his most inspired instrumental music. On our second and third concert programs, we'll visit the 1790s, when Beethoven emerged as the heir apparent to Haydn and Mozart, and the 1820s, when Beethoven and his own natural successor, Franz Schubert, penned their profound final works. From there, we'll visit the apex of the Romantic period, hearing music from the 1840s by Schumann, Chopin, and Mendelssohn. We'll hear the explosion of new musical styles that marked the 1890s and the Roaring Twenties. And our musical time travel will conclude with the final decade of the last millennium with works by some of today's vital compositional voices. Audio Notes are designed to enhance your enjoyment and deepen your appreciation of the music you'll be hearing at the festival. I'll be joined by Artistic Co-Director Wu Han and Audio Notes author and producer Patrick Castillo to offer historical and cultural context and a variety of perspectives on this summer's concert programs. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to seeing you at the concerts.
By the mid-19th century, the Romantic age has reached its apex. The turbulence of the 1840s, from the conquest of the American West to the European revolutions of 1848, is vividly reflected in the decade's impassioned music. Concert Program 4, Romantic Revolution, features music from the 1840s by Mendelssohn, Schumann, and Chopin. Each a quintessential romantic voice in his artistic maturity, demonstrating the era's unrestrained emotion and blinding virtuosity in full bloom.
The German composer Robert Schumann stands among the quintessential symbols of the Romantic era. Just as his music exhibited the hallmarks of Romanticism, so did the events of his life. When he was 18 years old, he traveled to Leipzig to study with the pianist Friedrich Wieck, whose 9-year-old daughter, Clara, was also a gifted pianist. Robert and Clara developed a close friendship, which blossomed years later into one of the most intense love affairs of music history. After a protracted legal battle with Clara's forbidding father, the two were married in 1840. By the mid-1840s, Schumann's physical and mental health had both begun to decline. He frequently battled bouts of depression, insomnia, and eventually psychosis. In his early 40s, his mental state reached its nadir. And after weeks of unbearable psychotic episodes, Schumann attempted to kill himself by jumping into the Rhine. Following his suicide attempt, Schumann demanded that he be committed to a mental asylum for fear of inadvertently harming Clara or their children. He was sent to an asylum in Bonn in 1854 and never saw his children again. He starved himself to death 2 years later. Clara was not permitted to see her husband until the day before he died.
The Piano Trio in D Minor, Opus 63, is the first of Schumann's three piano trios, not counting the Opus 88 Fantasiestücke, also scored for violin, cello, and piano, and has endured as the most beloved of the set amongst concertgoers. The work bleeds romantic pathos throughout its four movements. Even in its tempo instructions, Schumann sees a chance for poetry. The first movement is not merely allegro, but mit Energie und Leidenschaft, with energy and passion. The second theme counters the Sturm und Drang of the opening measures with a dreamy-eyed optimism. The movement offers a salient moment of respite from the intense D minor Leidenschaft when, after each of the exposition's themes is extended, the development comes to an abrupt halt and introduces a new musical idea. Schumann creates a fragile sonic texture. In addition to marking the music pianissimo, he instructs the pianist to depress the soft pedal and the strings to play sul ponticello, bowing near the bridge, producing a thin, glassy tone. After a full recapitulation, Schumann briefly recalls this optimistic interlude before the movement's tragic conclusion. The jaunty scherzo follows. A long phrase in the violin sets the weeping tone for the third movement, marked langsam mit inniger Empfindung, slowly, with intimate feeling. A brighter melody appears midway through the movement to contrast the elegiac character of the opening theme. The trio's finale, marked mit Feuer, with fire, features music of shimmering vivacity. The vast emotional terrain that Schumann traverses, from the tragic first movement through the lively scherzo and broken-hearted slow movement, and finally arriving at the triumphant finale, illustrates the archetypal romantic journey. The trio's impulsive rhetoric and great emotive breath confirm Schumann's place among the definitive voices of his generation.
The first three of Chopin's four chamber works mark the start of his professional career. The piano trio in G minor, opus 8, and for cello and piano, the introduction and Polonaise Brilliant, opus 3, and grand duo in E major were all completed by the time Chopin was 21 years old. But the composer's last chamber work dates from the final chapter of his career. Chopin composed his cello sonata in G minor, opus 65, between 1845 and 1846, during which time his nine-year relationship with the author George Sand saw its painful deterioration over a series of feuds involving Sand's children. While correlating an artist's creative output with the detail of his biography generally makes for unsung scholarship, Chopin's despondency, nevertheless, clearly pervades the sonata.
As with much of Chopin's late work, the cello sonata largely eschews the white-hot virtuosity of much of his earlier music in favor of a straightforward eloquence and expressive subtlety. Witness the dolorous theme that opens the Allegro Moderato, stated first by the piano, then, after a characteristic flourish, taken over by the cello. From here springs an outpouring of melody as generous in breadth as it is implacable in its melancholy. In an instant, the piano goes silent, and the cello strains upwards to whisper a high D. Piano responds with gentle chords, marked piano and dolce. This ethereal transition to the nostalgic second theme in B-flat major seems to capture Chopin's emotional fragility in the wake of his break with Sand. And indeed, this delicate music quickly explodes with furious ardor. Thank you. The movement's development section amplifies the music's volatility, juxtaposing soaring lyricism in the cello with fevered piano figurations. The music enters unexpectedly into G major, warm yet unsettled by disquieting chromaticism, as though gray skies darkened even the sweetest remembrances. Before returning to G minor for the movement's impassioned conclusion. The anguished Allegro Moderato is followed by an inclement Scherzo. The central D major trio section offers a welcome respite from the movement's argumentative tenor. But the scherzo's fatalism ultimately prevails. Though the shortest of the sonata's four movements, the tender largo provides the work's emotional center of gravity. Here we encounter one of Chopin's most inspired melodies, supported by such exquisite harmonic and textural subtlety, an unforgettable portrait of romantic expression. The sonata's Allegro finale reveals the compositional sophistication of an artist too oft regarded as no more than a salon virtuoso. Melodic immediacy, surprising harmonic shifts, and instrumental wizardry come together in perfect balance, ending the work on a dramatically self-assured note. By the 1840s, Felix Mendelssohn, the greatest child prodigy that Western music had ever seen, had fulfilled the promise of his youth and reigned as one of Europe's supreme musical figures. In addition to being recognized as its leading composer, he was a celebrated pianist, organist, and conductor. In 1835, he fielded competing offers to become music director of the Munich Opera, editor of the music journal Allgemeine Musikalische Zeitung, and music director of the Leipzig Gewandhaus Orchestra. He accepted the position in Leipzig, in which he contributed mightily to that city's musical life. Under his stewardship, the Gewandhaus Orchestra became one of the world's elite cultural institutions. 8 years into his tenure, Mendelssohn founded the Leipzig Conservatory, which would quickly attain similar distinction. Mendelssohn continued to have his pick of plum professional opportunities. In 1845, he received an invitation to conduct a festival in New York, and was offered a commission from the King of Prussia to compose incidental music to Aeschylus's Oresteia. Yet he declined both of these, opting to spend the first half of the year quietly with his family in Frankfurt. During this time, he composed two major chamber works, the piano trio in C minor, opus 66, and the string quintet in B flat major, opus 67. He also drafted a symphony, ultimately left unfinished, and worked on an edition of Bach's organ music.
Thus dating from the apex of Mendelssohn's professional renown, the B-flat quintet equally reveals a composer at the height of his creative powers. It is the composer's second and final string quintet, marking his return to a medium that he had last visited in 1826 with the quintet in A major, opus 18. That work is a product of Mendelssohn's remarkable adolescence. The previous year, at 16, he penned the magnificent octet, opus 20, still regarded as one of the finest works in the canon. 4 months after the quintet, Mendelssohn completed his overture to A Midsummer Night's Dream, a work that likewise endures as a hallmark of its era. The quintet in B-flat provides a mature foil to the earlier quintet. It is, strictly speaking, a late work, though Mendelssohn certainly had no sense in 1845 that he would die at 38, 2 years later. Yet in character too, the quintet marks a significant departure from his opus 18. The earlier work, Mendelssohn's first essay in a form chiefly innovated by Mozart, reveals the 17-year-old composer, self-assured, certainly, yet nevertheless audibly following a Mozartian model. Its melodies carry the refined elegance of the classical era. Its ensemble textures are redolent of Mozart's string quintets. By contrast, the Opus 87 quintet demonstrates the voice of a romantic master in full bloom immediately from its opening gesture. Forte tremolandi in the lower four voices, buoying the heroic ascending theme in the first violin. With the Allegro Vivace's second theme, a legato descending melody, Mendelssohn establishes a quintessentially romantic dynamic, evocative of the dialogue between Robert Schumann's alter egos, the extroverted Florestan, and the introspective Eusebius. This proceeds without repeat into the thrilling development section, ¶¶ and later a triumphant recapitulation, sustained throughout by melodic clarity, rhythmic vitality, and textural dynamism. The second movement serves as the quintet's scherzo, but eschews the hyper-caffeinated buzz of prototypical romantic scherzi. Instead, this movement, marked Andante Scherzando, projects a measured temperament. While also foregoing the lightning quickness of Mendelssohn's own signature Midsummer Night's Dream scherzo style, something of that rarefied music characterizes this movement as well, with its soft staccato and pizzicato gestures. Fanny Mendelssohn's description of the octet's scherzo, for which she claimed her brother drew inspiration from the Walpurgisnachtstraum in Goethe's Faust, applies equally well here. Quote, "Everything new and strange, and at the same time most insinuating and pleasing, one feels near the world of spirits, carried away in the air, half inclined to snatch up a broomstick and follow the aerial procession." End quote. The deeply felt adagio e lento counters the esprit of the first two movements with a sober melancholy. All five voices issue the lachrymose, dirge-like theme. From this solemn opening, the movement's pathos steadily intensifies to full-throated despair. This despair, at its height of anguish, gives way to music of profound and spiritual beauty, a redemption that will return with overwhelming passion at the movement's conclusion. The quintet's Allegro Molto Vivace finale revisits the opening movement's vigor. Though carefree in character, the melody is muscular in texture. No sooner has the theme been stated than the tremolandi of the quintet's opening return. As one irresistible musical idea after another comes to the fore, Mendelssohn's expert deployment of the ensemble's five voices continues to thrill the ear. A central episode, marked by intricate counterpoint, reflects the composer's fascination with Bach. Yet, in its melodic sensibility and expressive zeal, this soaring finale is unmistakably the work of a singular romantic master.
Audio notes are authored and produced by Patrick Castillo and narrated by David Finkel, Patrick Castillo, and Wu Han. Additional mastering was provided by Dahong Situ. Production support was provided by Nathan Pear. Musical excerpts appear courtesy of the following artists and organizations. Frédéric Chopin's Cello Sonata in G Minor, Opus 65, is performed by David Finkel and Wu Han and appears courtesy of Artist Led. Robert Schumann's Märchenbilder, performed by Richard O'Neill and Gilbert Kalisch, and Piano Trio No. 1 in D Minor, Opus 63, performed by Jeffrey Kahane, Joseph Swenson, and Paul Watkins. And Felix Mendelssohn's String Quintet in A Major, Opus 18, performed by Scott St. John, Jeff Nuttall, Leslie Robertson, Masumi Per-Rostad, and Brandon Vamos. And String Quintet in B-flat Major, Opus 87, performed by Ian Swenson, Georgia Flizanis, Cynthia Phelps, Geraldine Walter, and David Finkel, are available on Music at Menlo Live. Audio Notes is a copyrighted production of Music at Menlo.